things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Things are all well and good over here, Honey Bunch. How's it going over there in your little corner of the table?
It's fine. It's just fine.
It's not fine.
I know, but I feel like I've complained at the beginning of like the last four episodes, so my life is great. I have a lot to be grateful and thankful for. So, including this podcast, it's the thing that brings me the most joy right now.
See, bright, shiny spots.
Bright, shiny spots. Let me tell you, if I could research cults and conspiracies instead of doing 90% of the things that I have to do in my life right now, I would. Oh my God, that would be the dream. Yeah.
Share our podcast so we can just
become very famous.
I don't know. That gives me anxiety to think about.
I just want this to be my full-time job.
Can you imagine? What a dream. What a dream that would be.
That would be so exciting.
I'd really have to step up the quality of my research. Because let me tell you, this conspiracy I'm about to tell you about today.
Please tell me everything.
It's a little,
bit grim.
It's a little bit scattered.
Okay.
Because it was so fascinating to me that every single tangent I like spiraled down.
Research.
Yeah. And I like personally got in a spiral, but I knew I had to like cut out. So this isn't a 3-hour episode.
You were just like trying to put your blinders on.
I was trying to narrow it down to like the key points. And now it might seem like a little all over the place, but there's a lot to cover. Okay. We've got aliens.
Yes.
We've got cryptids.
Ooh.
We've got ghosts.
No way.
Poltergeist. Government researchers. We got it all. We got it all.
That sounds like a menagerie of different things that I'm so excited to hear about.
A menagerie from the depths of hell.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're about to talk about it on today's
conspiracy episode.
That's Taylor, by the way.
And that's Jenny over there. So far away.
We're not great.
We're like social distancing.
Look. Oh, our wingspans don't even touch. Such great. A big table.
Look at us being adulting and stuff.
Proud of us. We should have a mask on. But then you wouldn't be able to hear us enunciate.
Yeah. So we're doing our dang old best.
We're just doing the dang old best. It's all good in the hood. Do you want to jump right in?
Yeah.
And hear the story of the Skinwalker Ranch?
This is not what I thought you were doing.
No, it's not. I changed it up.
Oh my God. This is huge. I am shocked that you're about to bust this out in like 30 to 45 minutes.
I would like you to know that I did this under duress. Because I was feeling very uninspired by my original tale. And then I got very inspired by this. And then it was huge.
Oh, there's a documentary on Netflix that I started. Mm-hmm. And I had to backpedal myself out of it. Because I was like, I can't get this deep into something right now.
No. We do not have the time to commit to it.
No.
So the name of the Skinwalker Ranch alone conjures up creepy thrills for dedicated fans of the paranormal. Situated in northeastern Utah, this 512-acre parcel of picturesque desolation is famed as a hotspot for everything from poltergeist phenomena to crop circles to UFO sightings, dangerous electromagnetic forces, dancing fireballs, and cattle mutilations. Blech. If that's not enough, the ranch is also said to be cursed by an ancient Navajo spell that summons terrifying werewolf-like shapeshifters called skinwalkers to menace interlopers. Some have called it a supernatural place. Others have deemed it cursed. Terry Sherman got so spooked by the happenings on his new cattle ranch that 18 months after moving his family of four to the property, now known by many as the Skinwalker Ranch, he sold the parcel away.
Okay.
18 months. He did not last long. He and his wife, Glenn.
Cute.
Right. he and his wife, Gwen, shared their chilling experiences with a local reporter in June 1996.
Oh, this is recent-ish.
1996?
I mean, we were alive.
Okay.
So I guess. In my head, I think that's recent.
I'm 25 years ago!
I can't. I can't think of...
That's recent. It's just right around the room, Ben.
In the grand scheme of all the stories we've covered, we've, like, spanned the decades.
Okay, fair. Centuries.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the, I suppose, in the grand scheme of the space-time continuum, yes, it's recent.
I'm going to stand by it.
Okay, fair. They had said that they've seen mysterious crop circles, UFOs, and the systematic and repeated mutilation of their cattle in an oddly surgical and bloodless manner.
I don't like it.
I don't like it
what
either.
What you doing with the blood?
I don't, why isn't it there? What'd you do with it? Where'd it go?
It.
I don't know if I'm more concerned that there is no blood or that, like, if there was blood.
No, I'm concerned that there's not blood. Like, right, if there was blood, I feel like we could probably blame that on a lot of different things, you know, like something regular.
Where's the blood?
If there's no blood, that means that something more heinous is happening.
Where's the blood, bud? I gotta know.
Edward Cullen has come back.
Vampires with a taste for steak.
Extra rare.
Oh, That's how I take my steak. Gross. Surprise, it was me. Within 3 months of the story's publication, Las Vegas real estate magnate and UFO enthusiast,
I love them,
Robert Bigelow, bought the property for $200,000 for 512 acres.
512
acres for $200,000.
That's less than $1,000 an acre. That's like $500 an acre.
That's cheap land, bud.
Wow.
Well, that really sprung out of me. I couldn't stop that.
I too would jump on that deal.
Yeah, it's a good one. Especially if you're a UFO enthusiast.
Oh, yeah. In the middle of Utah?
I want to know, name one other UFO enthusiast that has $200,000.
You think the UFO enthusiasts are poor, Jenny?
As a UFO enthusiast, yes.
That's understandable.
Under the name of the National Institute for Discovery Science, Bigelow set up round-the-clock surveillance of the ranch, hoping to get to the bottom of the paranormal claims. But while the surveillance? Help me.
Surveillance
of the ranch, hoping to get to the bottom of the paranormal claims, it yielded a book, Hunt for the Skinwalker. Science confronts the unexplained at a remote ranch in Utah, in which several of the researchers claimed to have seen paranormal activities. They were unable to capture any meaningful physical evidence supporting the Sherman's incredible stories. The ranch was then resold to Adamantium Real Estate, which has since applied the trademark name Skinwalker Ranch. Had the Shermans been lying about what they saw, or under the spell of a collective delusion? Without evidence, the story they told are difficult to believe, but they're hardly unique. The Uinta Basin of eastern Utah has been such a hotbed of paranormal sightings over the years that some extraterrestrial enthusiasts have deemed it UFO Alley.
I like it.
It's a cute little name.
I would prefer UFO Alley to Tornado Alley. I won't lie to you.
I would like both.
Ooh, UFOs in a tornado.
Ooh, like Sharknado, but aliens.
Yeah!
Yeah, I'm into it.
Ooh, I bet those lights would be pretty.
Oh, stunning. I love it.
Instead of northern lights, we get alien lights.
That's wholesome, weirdly. I like it a lot. I quote, "You can't throw a rock in southern Utah without hitting somebody who's been abducted by aliens."
Wow, that is a substantial claim.
That is a substantial claim. That's why I said quote. It is not my claim. I do not claim that. Indeed, according to the Hunt for the Skinwalker, odd objects have been spotted overhead since the first European explorers arrived there in 1776. Also recent, according to your time frame.
I would not consider that recent, but okay.
Franciscan missionary Silvestre Velez de Escalante.
Wow, that was really good.
Thank you. Wrote about strange fireballs appearing over his campfire in El Rey. And before Europeans, of course, indigenous peoples occupied the Uinta Basin. Today, Skinwalker Ranch abuts the Uinta and Ouray Indian Reservation of the Ute tribe. Were the Shermans seeing things that nearby Native Americans had already taken note of centuries before? What other types of universal phenomena were happening at the ranch? Will this entire episode be filled with rhetorical questions? Probably. The answers to this and more. Okay, so let me, like, back this, like, alien gravy train up just a smidgeroony. The ranch, located in Uinta County, borders the Ute Indian Reservation. It was popularly dubbed the UFO Ranch due to a 50-year history of odd, just stuff. Okay. So, two researchers, Kelleher and Knapp, saw and or investigated evidence of 100 incidents.
Oh.
100 incidents. It included vanishing cattle, mutilated cattle, sightings of unidentified flying objects, orbs, large animals with piercing red eyes that they say were unscathed when they shot at them with bullets, invisible objects emitting destructive magnetic fields. Among those involved were retired U.S. Army Colonel John B. Alexander, who characterized the NIDSci effort as an attempt to get hard data using a standard scientific approach. However, the investigators admitted to difficulty obtaining evidence consistent with scientific publication.
Huh.
So they had experiences of all of these things, but they had a hard time documenting it and being able to apply any kind of like scientific method to it because it was all such like weird one-off experiences.
Huh. All right.
Cattle mutilations have been part of the folklore of the surrounding area for decades. When NIDSci founder billionaire Robert Bigelow purchased the ranch for $200,000.
Wait a second. He was a billionaire?
Yeah. He had $200,000. He's a UFO enthusiast. He's got money.
We're in the wrong field, Jenny.
I know. I, too, claim to be a UFO enthusiast, and I would like a check.
I would like $1 billion.
$1 billion, please. I will split it.
Ooh. Spicy.
Yeah. When he bought the ranch, this was a result of him being convinced by the stories of mutilations and strange lights and blah, 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 blah. Unusual impressions. They had like crop circles that would be made in the grass after these events, in the grass. And then again, in the soil would also be affected by like electromagnetic fields after the grass was laid down on top of it. And they would take soil samples, but they couldn't ever figure out why or what.
This was still in the 90s.
Yes. Okay. So in 1996, skeptic James Randi awarded Bigelow a Pegasus Award, which is, what's the word I'm looking for? It is a, oh my God. It's a, type, it's not, it's like poking fun at. An award, a Pegasus award. It's like a...
Oh, like satire?
Yes, thank you. It's satirical.
Got it.
Thank you.
Wow.
Okay, that was hard. Thank you for reading my brain like that. Cut that out. James Randi awarded Bigelow an award for funding the purchase of the ranch and supporting Harvard University's Professor John Max and author Bud Hopkins's investigations. Randi called the efforts a useless study of a supernatural or a cult happening.
He sounds like a fuddy-duddy.
He sounds like a fuddy-duddy. But like he's it. Here, we have two sides of the spectrum. So we have this dude who's just a skeptic.
Sure.
And then we have an army colonel and scientific researchers they're investigating. So it's like, even if you're middle of the road, you can fall on either. There's just two... Okay, let me back it up.
Too many sides. It's like an octagon.
There's too many like angles to come at this because now we're going to like back up a little bit, about to put the skin in Skinwalker, which is gross.
Yeah.
Repeated sightings of human-like creatures have led some to invoke the name Skinwalker of a shape-shifting character from the Navajo tribal folklore. Among the Navajo, skinwalkers are like werewolves or evil witches who can transform themselves into the creatures of their choosing. But Sherman's family ranch was 400 miles north of the Navajo Nation. It was next to the Ute territory. And when the Utes and Navajo did cross paths, it was an acrimonious relationship. It wasn't, it was it not super, it's like not the friendliest. The Navajo tended to be more aggressive, and they would take slaves from the Ute tribe. There was a direct conflict when the Navajo attempted to move up into the territory of the Ute, or modern day Pagosa Springs and Durango, Utah. A small river runs through the property on Skinwalker Ranch, and I know we've talked about it 1,000 times in the past. Running water is an amplifier of any kind of paranormal or otherworldly electromagnetic energy. While Skinwalkers don't feature in the Ute religion, there are still aspects of the ranch that make sense within the context of the lore. Other strange sightings have occurred directly next door at Bottle Hollow, a 420-acre man-made reservoir on the Ute's land right next to the ranch. It was filled with fresh water in 1970 by a federal government mandate. And in 1998, a police officer saw a large light plunge into the reservoir and then reemerge, flying off into the night sky. One night in 2002, four young non-Indigenous men standing on the reservoir shoreline saw a blue-white ball enter the lake and did not
reemerge.
So
it just like plopped itself in there and just like kept going?
Yeah, it just submerged itself, and then all was quiet.
Remember the other night when we were trying to talk about the journey to the center of the earth? Stupid. But that's what it reminded me of.
I mean, maybe it just did go all the way down there. That's where the lizard people are.
That's true.
Maybe it's a lizard people portal.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Now the conspiracy theories really start turning.
Oh, man.
You branch off and create your own.
That's the best kind of conspiracy theory. I agree. If we're being honest.
The ones you make up yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, not everything the Sherman saw on their ranch was skyborne UFOs. They also claimed to see mysterious large animals, most notably a wolf 3 times the size of a normal wolf. Terry shot at it at close range multiple times with a rifle, and it had no effect. Then on the night of March 12, 1997, after the ranch had been sold off, biochemist, like we're pulling in.
Smart people. The smart smarts.
Right. Combe Kelleher, who I mentioned earlier, working with Bigelow's National Institute for Discovery Science, claimed to see a large humanoid creature spying on the research team from a tree. Just watching.
A humanoid creature?
Humanoid creature. We don't know. Large. Just big. Hanging out in a tree. Spying. Creeping about in the dark. Sleazy.
Stalker-like.
Yeah. Like a giant used car salesman.
Like a giant voyeur. Perv.
Ew. Herp. Herp. Hate it. That's
a lot of noise effects.
I know. A lot of sound effects. He detailed it in the Bug Hunt for the Skywalker. The creature was approximately 50 yards away, watching the team safely from a tree perched 20 feet off the ground. The large creature laid motionless, almost casually, in the tree. The only indication of the beast's presence was a penetrating yellow light of the unblinking eyes as they stared fixedly back into the light. After he first fired at the creature with a rifle, it disappeared. It was then that I saw it, I quote, a single obvious oval track about 6 inches in diameter embedded deeply in the patch of snow. It looked unusual, a single large print in the snow with 2 sharp claws protruding from the rear of the foot.
So sorry. No, thank you.
It gets worse. Going a couple inches deeper, it almost looked like a bird of prey. Ooh. Maybe a raptor print, but huge.
It's a hippogriff.
And from, oh my God, it's a hippogriff. Oh my God.
Taylor cracked the code.
You cracked it.
My true colors are showing. We got a Twilight and a Harry Potter reference all in one.
Where's our money? 2 trumpet explorers from the University of Alabama in Huntsville, Matt Turner, who was a doctorate in mechanical engineering, and aerospace engineering graduate, Caitlin Russell. We love women in like STEM fields. Thank you.
For sure.
Visited the ranch in the summer of 2019 to perform experiments for a research team participating in the docuseries.
So recent.
Recent. The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. It airs on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time on the History Channel.
I think that's what's on Netflix, though.
Probably.
I think so.
This article that I pulled this from was written in May of this year, 2020.
Okay.
So they attended it and did their research in the summer of 2019.
Okay.
So yeah, it could be. I don't know how TV works. It could be on now. I don't know. So is it just tall tales and aliens and unexplained electromagnetic phenomenon? There certainly seems to be quite a bit of research and money being thrown around this whole 500 acres, if that's all it is. And if that is all it is, and it's just like, why are we creating such a big kerfuffle here, draw so much attention here? What else could we possibly be hiding
right
elsewhere?
If it's aliens, I would love to know why they have chosen this 500, like, square mile or a 500 acre plot of land.
I don't know.
But you would think that they're aliens. They can go anywhere.
Why here? Why? And that could be what they're trying to figure out. Because if you think, like, out west in the United States, like, you've got Roswell, New Mexico.
That's true.
You've got the Stardust Ranch in Arizona. You've got the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah. It's like the Death Valley area where it's arid and nobody lives there. Flat. Maybe it's a good, maybe it's just like a helipad.
Maybe it's a good landing strip.
Yeah. I don't know.
Listen, we're cracking this case wide open, y'all.
I'm proud of us.
We have figured it out.
Listen.
Hippogriffs and flatland. That's what aliens like.
Why are aliens so obsessed with hippogriffs? Just can't get enough. Anyway, so that is the very brief, abridged version.
Oh my gosh.
Of the Skinwalker Ranch. And will we ever know the truth? No, because we live in an authoritative dystopian reality and we'll never know anything.
I feel like this is probably one that we're going to have updates for in the future.
Yeah. Like in 6 months when we're like,
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
The Earth is dying. We need aliens to come save us.
For sure. Ready? Oh.
Ah.
Wow. Good.
Thanks.
All right. I am going to take a page out of your book, and I'm going to try to read mine from my phone.
Ooh.
We're going to see how it goes.
Proud of you.
We'll see. I have it printed just in case it goes haywire, but
okay.
Feel like it might be fine. Okay. So I am going to tell you the founding mommy and daddy of alien abductions in the United States.
I'm sorry, what?
Barney and Betty Hill and their abduction.
Betty Hill. Okay, sorry.
Not to be confused with Barney and Betty Flintstone.
Oh! Wait. Is it Barney and Betty?
Yeah.
Fred and Wilma.
Barney and Betty. Okay. Oh, wait.
Is that right?
I think that's right. Barney and Betty. Are they still Flintstone?
Barney and Betty.
Uh-huh.
No, I don't think they're Flintstones.
Okay.
I think that's their married name.
Yeah. No, but it's Wilma and what's the other guy?
Fred and Wilma Flintstone.
And then who are Betty and
Rubble.
Barney? Rubble. That's it.
Wow. We're really testing our Flintstone knowledge.
Testing pop culture today. Oh my God. Okay. So I'm trying to be more cognizant of listing my sources because the journalism student in me thinks that I'm trying to steal sources.
Oh, shit. Should I do that?
I don't know. I think it might be a good idea.
Oh, okay.
Just in case, like, we get famous later.
I don't think that's going to happen, so I'm not going to do that.
But my sources were thehistorychannel.com, BuzzFeed, Unsolved Network.
Ooh.
Not to be confused with Ryan and Shane's.
Yeah. Spinoff,
but this is their network. And then, of course, Wikipedia. Duh.
Duh.
All right. Betty and Barney Hill's story is one that shaped how we talk about alien abductions today.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're like the first...
The OGs?
The first ones that got national attention. Yeah.
Can you imagine being the first person to be abducted by aliens and you're like,
what the fuck just happened to me?
No one's gonna believe this.
Right. And that's what happened.
Okay.
So Betty was a social worker and Barney worked for the U.S. Postal Service. He had to drive 60 miles each way to get to the office that he worked at.
Fuck.
I know. And that will come into play later.
Okay.
The couple lived in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Okay.
So not in the...
Not in the UFO belt.
No, not in UFO belt. They were both very involved in civil matters and they were both members of the NAACP. Okay. They were a biracial couple in 1961.
A moment of silence for Barney and Betty.
And the struggles that they had to go through.
God. And being abducted by aliens.
Rough times.
Oh, I love them so much. Rough times.
They were, that was obviously very rare for that time.
Sure, yeah.
So Barney sat on the board for the United States Commission for Civil Rights as well. So they were both very smart, activists. Very educated, very stable people.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily what we traditionally think of as people who are about to be abducted by aliens.
No, people sitting in a trailer in the desert with like tin hats.
Right.
And no radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just normal people.
I love that.
So overall, they led a very quiet, normal life. But on the weekend of September 19th, 1961, the couple decided to take a last-minute road trip to see Niagara Falls and Montreal, Canada.
Hmm.
On their way home, they were exhausted. They stopped for coffee at a roadside diner at about 10 p.m., and they were on track to make it home by 2 or 3 a.m. Yeah, late. They were driving through the White Mountains on Route 3. At about 10:30 p.m., Betty looked out of the passenger side window and saw a bright light. At first, it looked like a shooting star, but it got larger and closer very quickly.
Ooh.
Soon, it seemed to be moving alongside, following the car.
Oh, ew, that gave me chills. I don't like it. I don't like it.
So, Barney was a World War II vet, so this dude knows his planes and shit. And he...
okay. Lend some credibility there for old Barney. Okay.
He's
like, buddy, that ain't no plane.
Yeah, he was like, this does not look like anything I know. At first, he did try to rationalize it and say it was a shooting star, it's Jupiter, it's a satellite.
It's Jupiter.
It could be a reflection. But soon, they became so curious that they stopped the car. Not a great choice, I'm not gonna lie.
I mean, what are you going to do?
I don't think I've ever been so curious about something that I've gotten out of my car in the middle of the night in the mountains ever.
I just have like a really strong survival instinct and also anxiety.
Yeah, no, get out. Drive faster.
I'm not going to be in the mountains at 2 a.m. Like,
That's true. Like, the sun was setting and we were walking around downtown Fort Wayne a couple years ago and you're like, girl, we gotta go.
I'm not trying to be out after dark. That's when all the shenanigans happen. I'm not trying to be in shenanigans. I have a full-time job. I have to work at 8 a.m. I gotta go.
We gotta get safe as houses here, friends.
Yes.
So they actually had a pair of binoculars with them, and they tried to get a look at the lights that way. And Betty looked through the binoculars and said it looked like the light was white and was really an object spinning in the air instead of just like a big moon following them.
No. Ew, I got chills.
Yeah. So now that they were outside of the car, they could hear that the object wasn't making anywhere near the amount of noise that you would expect from a plane or helicopter.
Oh, no.
It was really quiet that night, and the object didn't disturb that soundless night.
Ew.
They got back into the car and started driving again. A little while later, the object was floating directly above them, and they believed it to be about 100 feet above them. Barney stopped the car again and got out, and he was in disbelief that the object could possibly be. By all accounts, he was a pragmatic man. He didn't believe in things like aliens. Barney kept the engine running, but took a handgun with him. Well, that's not going to stop him.
You're going to shoot him.
And ran back into the dark field to get a better look. He described the craft as long like a jet, but flat like a pancake.
Using what we know.
Yeah. He saw rows of windows on the front of the aircraft and gray beings wearing glossy black uniforms black caps.
Oh, hell no.
They seemed to be looking right at him. He believed there to be between 8 and 11 of them. He tried to lift his hand to get his gun, but he was unable to move. A voice communicated with him.
No.
Telepathically.
No.
not to put down his binoculars. Because they wanted him to see.
Watch us. Oh my god, ew, wait, hold on. Can we pause? I'm so heaved. Okay.
All right.
Oh my god.
Only one thought came to him. We're about to be captured.
No shit.
Run!
You can tell he works for the government. He's a smart one.
Yeah. Frantically, he ran back to the car and barreled down the road as Betty tracked the craft, craning her head outside the car window. Without explanation, loud...
Betty, I forgot Betty's still in the freaking car.
I know! He just left her at the car!
Oh my god!
Loud, rhythmic beeps sounded from the car's trunk.
What?
The whole car was vibrating, and Betty and Barney said that they both felt tingly... Mm-mm. And the couple felt instantly drowsy and lost consciousness.
No, 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 no.
Jenny's having a moment.
I'm so grossed out. It's so gross.
And we did not mean to do an alien heavy story today.
No, but they give me... Taylor, I'm spooked.
I'm fucking scared of aliens, okay?
Same.
I don't... Mm-mm.
No. That's not my... The aliens are not my brand.
It gets so much worse.
No, it does?
Oh, ew.
Oh, okay.
I'm so sorry.
Okay, fine. Go.
I apologize now for the ew.
Okay.
By the time they came to, 2 hours had passed, and they were about 35 miles from where they were.
What?
Yeah.
The car?
Yeah.
It picked up the whole car?
We'll find out.
Okay, all right, sorry. I'm not... Sorry.
It's okay.
I got fired up. That's so disrespectful.
I know. Just like taking your car.
Just like put at
it's
least.
It's auto theft, at least.
I appreciate like the civility of like you wiping my memory or trying. But like if you could just put me back where I belong.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And also maybe like do something with the time.
Like, yeah.
You're make it the me, same time.
You're telling me you can't like pause real quick.
Don't even do what you need to do. Just leave me alone. No. Actually, about to get my aluminum hat out. So they arrived at their home at dawn on September 20th.
2 hours later than what they thought they were going to be.
Right.
Okay.
When they got into the house, both Betty and Barney had odd impulses that neither could explain. Betty was determined that they should take their luggage and keep it at the back entrance of the house instead of putting their clothes away and unpacking.
What?
Yep. And Barney felt like he needed to examine his body. He felt compelled to examine his genitals, although he did not find anything wrong.
What?
But it was like obsessively checking.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh. Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, no. I don't fucking think so.
So their watches had stopped working and they never worked again.
What?
Despite replacing batteries, all that kind of good stuff. Barney's best dress shoes that he was wearing that evening were scratched to hell and they had to be thrown away, and Betty's dress was torn up.
What?
Yeah, so like the hem of her dress was torn. Okay. And then I think the side of it was torn.
Ooh.
Barney and Betty both took long showers to remove any possible contaminations and both drew pictures of what they saw.
Oh my god.
There were shiny centric circles on their car's trunk that had not been there the previous day. Betty and Barney both experimented with a compass, noting that when they moved it close to the spots, the needle would roll rapidly. When they moved it a few inches away, the shiny spots, it would drop back down.
It sounds like electromagnetic fields!
Yep. The next day, they contacted the Peace Air Force Base to report their encounter, and Betty was afraid of being labeled as a kook and withheld some of the details.
Yeah, no shit!
I know! I would be like, I'm not calling anybody!
I'm never talking about this again!
No!
I
would be afraid the government was going to take me.
Oh my fucking god.
You're stressed?
I'm so sorry. I'm so stressed. I think I need a break.
We're like not even done with the first page.
What? You had six more pages?
6 pages of research and I am almost at the bottom of page one.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry.
Okay, go. All right.
Didn't do a good job of a warning. I've been very stressed this week.
This is the Ant Hill Kids all over again. Like, I think I might cry. Please, I can't. I gotta stand up.
Oh, my God. All right.
Okay.
If you have anything to say, please say it into your microphone.
I will. Just go. God.
Okay. All right. Let me see. The next day, they contacted Peace Air Force Base. Betty was afraid of being labeled a kook. The report was actually forwarded to Project Blue Book. So we'll get more into Project Blue Book later. We'll probably do a whole episode on it. But in a nutshell, it is a research project funded by the military to look into UFOs.
Really?
Yeah. You don't know about Project Blue Book?
I've literally never heard of it.
Oh. 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 It is the big heave. It is a big heave. You're trying to dry heave. So Betty was an avid reader and went to the library often after her encounter and started checking out books on UFOs. This is when she discovered the civilian UFO group, National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomenon, or NICAP. A NICAP member and astronomer, Walter Webb, spoke with Betty, and they ended up doing a six-hour interview together. During this interview, Barney asserted that he had developed a sort of mental block and that he suspected there was some portions of the event that he did not wish to remember. I'm sorry.
That's trauma.
I'm remembering what's happening next. And you're just going to get so much more uncomfy. All right. So Webb stated that they were telling the truth and the incident probably occurred exactly as reported, except for some minor uncertainties and technicalities that must be tolerated at any such observation where human judgment is involved. For example, exact time and length of visibility, apparent sizes of objects and occupants, and distance and height of occupants.
Sure.
Just as a side note, I could not find any additional info on this Dr. Webb, so he could be like a total freaking quack for all we know. I couldn't find anything about
him. I doubt it.
You're gonna doubt a UFO researcher? He did not have millions of dollars.
I'm so nervous.
So 10 days after the event, Betty started having super vivid nightmares. As someone who gets nightmares recently, this is not good. This is not a great time. The nightmares went on for 5 days straight. She said that she never had such vivid dreams and that she was able to recall with such detail. And she ended up writing them down and telling Barney about them. Barney just was like, meh. He didn't seem concerned.
Barney.
Right.
Oh, God.
In one dream, she and Barney were driving and came up on an obstacle in the road and men surrounded their car. She lost consciousness, but eventually regained it. She realized she was being walked through the woods by two small men. Barney was walking behind her, but seemed to be at a distance or be in a trance or sleepwalking. The men stood about 5 feet to 5 feet, 4 inches and wore matching blue uniforms. They appeared almost human with black hair, dark eyes, prominent noses, and bluish lips.
No.
Their skin was gray in color.
No.
I can't. I gotta go.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry. I can't.
Jenny just left the freaking room. Oh my god. Okay, so Jenny had to take a little tiny breather. I was unaware of how uber spooked she was gonna get about aliens.
I didn't know it was gonna be this scary.
So, buckle up.
Does it get worse?
Yeah.
Okay.
I will try to give you a warning before it gets worse.
I think it's too late for that.
I just don't know what's gonna get worse for you. Like, little blue men for me, like, that's not a big deal.
They're being carried through the woods. She's having, like, nightmare. This is what happens in real life when shit really happens to you and your brain shuts down from trauma. You relive it in ways that your brain can control your body and your emotional reaction to it. That's what's happening. She's reliving.
Okay, I have about 10 bullet points that are pretty rough.
Okay, are you gonna start on them right now?
Yes.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, so this is like what happens when they get into the spaceship. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you hear sucking on something and slight bubbling, that is Jenny.
I'm just going to push this away. I'm cool.
Freaking out on her vape.
Let's go.
Okay. So, in the dream, she and Barney walk up to the ramp into the spaceship with two gray men. They separate Betty and Barney, and Betty protests, but the lead alien takes her in and takes longer and said that it would take longer to examine them if they were together. So they lead them into separate rooms. Betty is taken into a room with the leader, and another alien comes in that she refers to as the examiner.
Oh.
No, thank you. I'm pretty sure my insurance does not cover alien examinations, so I'm going to need you to put me back, please.
What's the copay on this thing that does not cover it?
Both the leader and examiner spoke to her in English, but she noted that the examiner's English wasn't as good as the leader's. The examiner had a calm demeanor and told her that they wanted to find out the differences between their species so they would be conducting an exam on her.
Okay, well, the difference is we don't abduct you.
We can't. We would if we could.
Yeah, probably, honestly. I hate us. I hate it here.
Honestly, maybe take me with you.
I don't know. Let's see where this story ends.
The examiner cut off a lock of Betty's hair. He examined her eyes, ears, mouth, teeth, throat, and hands. He saved trimmings from her fingernails. After examining her legs and feet, he used a dull knife, similar to a letter opener, to scrape some of her skin into what resembled cellophane.
Oh.
All right. Brace yourself, please.
Okay.
He then tested her nervous system, and he thrust a needle into her navel, which caused Betty agonizing pain, whereupon the leader waved his hand in front of her eyes, and the pain vanished.
What?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Right? Ooh, the thing in the navel.
Oh, I can't. Don't touch. It's like an automatic gag button. Oh, something touches same. Me in the belly button.
Please don't. No. Like, Ryan thinks it's hilarious.
It's not.
I'm like, it makes me gag.
It's gross.
It's horrible. The examiner left the room, and Betty had a short conversation with the leader. She picked up a book with rows of strange symbols that the leader said she could take home with her. She also asked him where he came from, and he pulled down an instructional map dotted with stars and showed her.
What?
Mm-hmm. In Betty's dream, the alien men began escorting the couple from the ship when a disagreement broke out. The leader then informed Betty that she could not keep the book. Did I already say that?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So she picked up a book with rows of strange symbols that the leader said she could take home with her.
Oh,
when
God.
She asked where he came from, that's when he pulled down the instructional map with the stars. So when they're being led out of the spaceship, she's like carrying her book with her, like doop de doop de doo.
And some dude is like, bro, she can't take the fucking book with her.
Right, we're about to wipe their memories, you ding dong.
What you. Oh my fucking God.
So they're like, I'm sorry, you can't take the book with you and take the book back.
Oh my gosh.
The leader informed Betty she couldn't keep the book, stating that they did not want her to remember that encounter.
No shit.
She and Betty were, she and Barney were taken to their car where the leader suggested they wait to watch the craft's departure. They did so and then resumed their drive. So they just like watched it go. Bye.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to get into, like, some history for a minute, and then I will tell you one more bullet that gets really bad.
Okay.
In November of 1962, the Hills went to church, and they had a guest speaker at the church by the name of Ben H. Sweat. Sweat was in the Air Force, and he had an interest in poetry and hypnosis and spoke about both of these things at church.
It seems like a weird thing for churches in the 60s.
I would love to watch it. Like, let's go.
Yeah, same.
Sign me up. Betty and Barney approached Sweat after the sermon and told him about their encounter, and they were wondering if hypnosis may help them recover the missing time from the night of the abduction. This was the first time they had spoke to someone about the encounter other than when they originally reported it and had their interview with Webb. Sweat wasn't skilled enough to do hypnosis and cautioned them against going to someone like an amateur like himself. In March of 1963, the Hills discussed their encounter at church, and this was the first time they talked about it publicly.
Wow.
One thing led to another, and the Hills saw a hypnotherapist in January of 1964. Benjamin Simon was a hypnotherapist in Boston. In their early discussions, before any actual hypnosis started, Simon asserted that the encounter was weighing more heavily on Barney than he wanted to admit. He also did not want to believe that they had been abducted by aliens, but he did want to help... he did not believe that they had been abducted by aliens, but he did want to help them discover what happened to them that night.
Okay.
Barney had an emotional response to being hypnotized. He was frightened, incredulous, and anxious while under hypnosis.
Well, sure. It probably mimicked the state that he was in with the aliens.
Right. That, like, trance-like.
Yeah.
He reported that due to his fear during the encounter, he kept his eyes shut for most of it. So he didn't see a lot of it.
Okay. He's scared.
Yeah. Okay, this bullet is a little rough.
Oh, God.
Barney reported that the binocular strap had broken when he ran from the UFO back to his car. He recalled driving the car away from the UFO, but after he felt irresistibly compelled to pull off the road and drive into the woods. He eventually sighted six men standing in the dirt road. The car stalled, and three of the men approached. They told Barney not to fear them. He was still anxious, however, and reported that the leader to... And he reported that the leader told Barney to close his eyes. While hypnotized, Barney said, "I felt like my eyes had been pushed into my eyes." Like, they pushed his eyes in.
Oh.
Who?
Oh!
I'm sorry.
Oh. It's okay. Go.
Barney spoke of the being's eyes in the first session, saying that they would mesmerize him. He said, "Oh, those eyes, they're there in my brain." In the second session, he said, "All I see are these eyes. I'm not even afraid that they're not connected to a body. They're just there. They're just up close to me, pressing against my eyes."
Oh my God.
Barney relayed that when they were taken into the ship, they were separated. He was escorted into a room by three of the beings and told to lie down on a rectangular table. Yikes, warning. They placed a cup-like device over his genitals, and he felt a sperm sample had been taken from him. So, I mean, just like low-key sexual assault.
Very much high-key sexual assault. Yeah. Sexual assault does not have a low key to be in.
No. They scraped his skin and looked into his ears and mouth, and they were really interested in his dentures. They were like, "These come out."
This isn't attached, bud.
No, like the woman's were attached.
What's up with your chompers?
Yeah. All right. Oh no, I forgot about this. Oh. All right, go ahead and just take yourself like a nice soothing breath.
Okay.
I meant like a clean air, not a vape, but that's fine.
This is soothing.
All right. You feel good? You feel calm?
Yes.
All right. A thin tube or cylinder was inserted into his anus.
Ah!
He felt that one of the beings was feeling his spine through the tube.
Oh, no!
Counting his vertebrae.
Through the butt?
Yeah.
You can do that on the outside.
They were like, phew. One, two, three.
No!
I got sweaty writing it.
Oh! Damn, this might be the most fucked up thing you have told me, both in and out of this podcast.
That's saying a lot.
Okay. Ew.
It makes me claustrophobic to think about it.
It just makes me annoyed that, like, you can hypnotize people and, like, abduct them, but you can't find a better way to count my vertebrae than through my butthole. Is that really the best you got?
I don't like it.
Oh.
All right. Both Barney and Betty said that when the aliens were talking to them, they could understand them, but their mouths weren't moving, so they understood it to be telepathy. But it was funny, at the time, they didn't have that word, telepathy. So they were, like, saying, "I'm thought talking."
Oh, bless them.
Yeah, I was like, oh, cute little babies.
Thought talking.
Betty's hypnosis session was very closely resembled to her dreams, just a few notable differences. The capture and release were different than her dreams, and she described the beings a little bit differently than in her dreams. Betty had also had an emotional response to hypnosis, and Simon even ended one session because she was crying.
Oh.
Simon gave Betty a post-hypnotic suggestion that she should sketch a copy of the star map, and she later described as a three-dimensional projection similar to a hologram.
Ooh. Did they even have holograms back then?
I think so. I think there were, like, ideas sci-fi of what that could be like.
Okay.
Eventually, she did what Simon suggested. Although she said that the map had many stars, she only drew those that stood out to her in her memory. Her map consisted of 12 prominent stars connected by lines and three lesser ones that formed a distinctive triangle. She said that the stars connected by the solid lines formed trade routes where the dashed lines were less traveled stars.
Oh my God.
Right.
What? Bananas. She looked at alien Google Maps.
Right. And she was like, you are here. She dropped her pin. It was like, I'm here.
Ah!
Yeah. After the hypnosis session, Simon basically concluded that all of this was a fantasy that came from Betty's dreams. Barney didn't think that this was true, and did think that they were abducted by aliens, although he never fully embraced the idea like Betty did.
Okay.
During this time, the Hills were living their normal lives, and they would talk about the encounter with friends, family, and the occasional researcher, but they never sought out fame or attention. And this is the one thing that gives credibility to their story for me. They weren't trying to make a buck on the experience. They were just looking for answers. However, in 1965, a reporter with the Boston Traveler got wind of the story and published it. The day after the story ran, the United Press International ran the story, and the Hills became a worldwide sensation.
Oof.
In 1966, a writer named John G. Fuller partnered with Simon and the Hills to write a book called The Interrupted Journey, which was very popular. It had many runnings and, like, many printings. Of course, there are plenty of naysayers saying that the couple made the whole thing up. People close to the Hills say that they watched a show called The Outer Limits that featured aliens 2 weeks before their encounter. The Hills say that they didn't watch the show, but their friends were like, yeah, bud, you did. So, others,
No, just, like, so what? What's the other option? They just made it up because they were bored?
Right.
Was there, like, a gas leak in the car and they, like, jointly hallucinated?
I don't know.
Okay.
Others point to stress of being an interracial couple in the mid-1960s, and that would have been enough to make them delusional about a fantasy escape from the world.
Why would anybody make their life harder?
I don't know. Why does anybody make anything up?
Attention?
Yeah.
But, like...
I don't know.
Okay.
And this kind of goes back to that 60-mile drive that Barney had every day, that yeah. they were saying he was exhausted. And that drive, they stopped at a diner for coffee at 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So they were obviously very tired, or else they wouldn't have stopped for coffee.
Sure.
So some people think that they fell asleep, like they pulled over and both fell asleep and maybe left the car running in the gas leak.
Oh.
Or okay. Like carbon monoxide or something like that. If they pulled into like a cornfield or something like that.
Okay.
That might have blocked the tailpipe.
Okay.
Possible.
Sure.
I mean, probably more probable than getting abducted by aliens, but who knows?
But I feel like still very conditions would have to be perfect.
Yes. Yes. Later in life, Betty became somewhat of a celebrity in the UFO culture. However, there were also reports of her being a very unreliable source of information.
Okay.
She said that after the encounter moving forward, she and Barney would see an alien or UFO about 80% of the time when they left their house.
What?
There's also one very popular story that I read multiple times of her being out and about and talking about aliens to people and her being like, oh my God, there's one right there. There's a UFO and it's a light post.
Oh.
And so people are like, that's normal. Like, we see those all the time.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of people saying, like, her delusions just kind of kept escalating.
Okay.
As they went on.
Maybe they're lasting effects from being abducted by aliens.
Could be. So what's interesting about people that who have alien encounters or are abducted is that they tend to be very normal people. They aren't out hunting for Bigfoot or searching for unicorns. They're normal people with normal jobs, and they seem to have a strong emotional well-being and a good mental state.
You don't get abducted if you want to be abducted.
Right. However, alien abductions tend to be from a first person's perspective, which is the most unreliable perspective as far as like research goes, because sure. It's so difficult to prove. And as humans, our memories are faulty.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years after The Interrupted Journey came out, a school teacher from Ohio named Marjorie Fish read the book and became fascinated with the star map that Betty drew. And she thought she might be able to decipher it and find out where the star system was located.
Okay.
She started by assuming that one of the 15 stars on the map would be our sun. In studying thousands of vantage points over several years, the only one that seemed to match the Hill map was from the viewpoint of the double star system Zeta Reticuli. So she was able to prove that the star...
Ew.
Yeah, it exists.
No.
Yeah.
Does it? Yeah. I don't want it to.
It does. Hey, sorry.
Okay.
Sadly, Barney died of a cerebral hemorrhage in 1969 at the age of 46, and Betty died of cancer in 2004 at the age of 84, and she never remarried.
Cerebral hemorrhage?
Mm-hmm.
The fuck is that? Is like, it brain bleeds?
Yep.
Okay. All like that.
Mm-hmm. Fishy. And that is the story of the hill abduction that I got way more upsetting than I had anticipated. I am so sorry.
I'm just upset in general.
I see that.
Okay.
I see that.
I didn't...
Even during Roche Terrio, we didn't even have to actually pause it.
No, we did. I had to cry a little bit. We had to pause it.
Did we?
Yeah. We paused it because I had to stand up and walk out.
Okay. All right.
Twice. It's happened to me twice.
So, thanks for hanging out with us. Sorry if that made you super uncomfy.
I accept your apology.
You signed up for this.
I know. Gosh dang it. Thanks for listening. You did a fantastic job. Oh, that was amazing.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for listening.
Yes.
We're still doing our sticker giveaway.
We are. So make sure you rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts, and then send us a DM with your screenshot and then where you would like us to send this sticker.
Mailing address, please.
Yes, we will get it out in the mail to you, and it brings us such joy. It makes us so happy.
It really does. We've been having a lot of fun writing like handwritten love notes.
Oh, little to you love guys. Notes. They're
We're
so
having
cute.
Just a blast. So if you want a love note and a sticker, leave us a review. Follow us on the social meds and stick around for another really awful episode that I'm sure is going to make my heart hurt.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun.
What's next? Cults.
Ooh. The real life ookie spooky.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, if conspiracies didn't get you going, just hang out. Cults will be up in a week.
Yep.
Goodbye.